Well met, and welcome to episode 15, the Bill/Shakespeare Project podcast for October 18th, 2009. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings, this is Bill Walthall, and this week we're going to have a DVD review of the first part of Henry VI, and a recap of this week's blog entries. As I mentioned last month, the histories are a little thin when it comes to DVD releases. While last month's play, The Taming of the Shrew, had four versions that I reviewed, with an additional two that I didn't, the Mark Singer version, highly recommended, and the modern update, 10 Things I Hate About You, also worth a rental, there's only one version this month of the first part of Henry VI, and it's part of that BBC Complete Works series. Well, there is another version, another BBC production, part of an entire sequence of history plays. I think it's called The Age of Kings, and I'm trying to track down a copy. If I do, I'll use it for another podcast later in the month. And on that administrative note, since December starts on a Sunday, I'm going to use that post-Halloween podcast on this play, partially to make up for the lost weekend at the beginning of the month, but more importantly, to avoid trying to rush and crank out a podcast for the second part of Henry VI before being completely prepared. So, where was I? Ah, yes, the BBC's Complete Work of Shakespeare series production of Henry VI, Part 1. Well, it was directed by Jane Howell, the same woman who helmed the Titus Andronicus from this series. This production was done a couple of years before her Titus. Howell's a very solid director. I'm looking forward to seeing what she does with the remaining plays in the history tetralogy, as well as The Winter's Tale much further down the road. So she's a good director, but here she's kind of saddled with an awkward play. It's too historically inaccurate a play to be played reverentially. It's got a title character who doesn't appear until nearly halfway through the piece. It has a possible central character in Talbot who really doesn't work toward anything. Its portrayal of Joan of Arc is plain bizarre. There's the creation of other villains who I suppose will take center stage in the next play, but for now there's just a great deal of foreshadowing. But there's also some great comic turns and some heartfelt emotion. It just feels totally schizophrenic. And Howell's direction reflects this. After a solemn opening, the funeral procession of Henry V, after all. Funeral march to open the play, just like Howell's Titus. Interesting. The play takes on a comic tone, with the title of the play scrawled upon a sheet that covers a doorway on the stage through which the French army comically enters. These French nobles, especially Ian Saner's Dauphin, are played for laughs as preening, arrogant twits. The Joan, played by a very young Brenda Blethyn, is strong and dynamic and physical with short, choppy, bleached blonde locks. It's interesting given that most paintings of La Pucelle have her with darker hair, though more recent portrayals of her in film have lightened hair, but not quite as light as Blethyn's, however. She looks like she just came out of a hair salon. Anyway, she's confident. But it never looks like she's one chosen by God, a performance, I suppose, that's supported by the text. A text, to put it mildly, that is unkind to her memory. So this comic tone is continued when we see the English army approach. They're on horses, but the horses are fake. They're shells of bodies that the actors rise out of so that they appear to be in the saddle, although it's the actor's legs that move the horse contraption about the stage. And this comic tone is perpetuated by the use of asides, with the actors turning directly to the camera. Now, when we meet Talbot, the tone changes. He is a kick-ass warrior, and he's played by Trevor Peacock. Now, if that name sounds familiar, you might remember him as the actor who played Titus for Howell's Andronicus a couple of months back. He rocks. If Titus was anything like this Talbot on the battlefield, no wonder the Goth and the French considered him their terror. Now, when in Act 2 he's invited to the Countess of Auvergne to be part of her ambush, the tone swings back to comic. When the tables are turned, the camera reveals the Countess surrounded by the soldiers, each holding their sword point up to her neck. It's like a ruffled collar of sharp steel. And it's pretty funny. And when Talbot leads her off for wine and cates at the end of the scene, it's obvious that the cates are going to be more of the kind discussed by Petruchio last month, rather than just cakes. Now, when we finally meet Henry, our title character, the king, at the beginning of Act 3, his appearance is a shock. He's supposed to be young, a child. But it's obvious that the casting was not just for this play, but for the entire series. Regardless, Peter Benson as Henry is just too old. When I looked at him, my first thought was, my God, this guy's in his late 30s. And I thought I was being generous. And I was. Benson was 62 years old when the play was produced. That's just way too old. And it was an impediment for me to lose myself in the play. Because, remember, the historical Henry died at the age of 50. And for most of this play, he's in his pre-teens to teens. Anyway, Plantagenet is played by Bernard Hill in a vibrant but mature reading. I can't wait to see what happens with him in the next two plays. On the other hand, the coward character of Fastolf, who was no coward in real life and whose character in the play, many believe, was the inspiration for Sir John Falstaff in the later tetralogy, is certainly played in this production if he were Falstaff. Fat, old, and comically cowardly. Now, late in the play, when Joan calls upon her fiends, none appear on stage. Now, this is an interesting choice. Would the fiends make the scene too comic? Too outlandish? I'm not sure. And I'm not sure I missed them. But since this is my first experience watching the play, heck, this month was the first time I've read the play, I would really like to see a production, either on stage or on film, where the fiends are used, just to have a point of comparison. Now, after this scene, which takes on a slightly more serious tone, especially without the fiends, we get the Suffolk Margaret scene. It's written pretty comically, and the performance is certainly that. While one character asides to the camera, the other is left to comment on their lack of communication. Suffolk's, "Lady, wherefore talk you so?" and Margaret's response of, "I cry your mercy, 'tis but quid for quo," is hilariously on the mark, and a great melding of text and performance. So, like Howell's Titus, I like what she's done with the first part of Henry VI, but I'm not sure I can give it a positive review. Then again, I don't think I can give it a negative review. I have a strong feeling, given that she'll be directing all four plays in this tetralogy, that I'll need to see more of her work on the series before I can give a complete recommendation. So for now, it's worth a gander via Netflix, but I'm going to hold off on saying it's worth purchasing from Amazon. Let's just take a wait-and-see attitude on this one. If you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries this week, you've missed out on subjects including sources for Shakespeare's histories, a historical timeline for the play, a military timeline for the play, a discussion of the historical inaccuracies within the play, a short introduction to the War of the Roses, and a news story concerning a new Shakespeare collection at UCLA. So if you would like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix? Check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or at our Facebook page. Though remember that the Facebook page is more for Shakespeare news than for daily discussions of our play of the month. And of course, you can always join us again for our next podcast. We hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill/Shakespeare Project podcast for October 18th, 2009. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon.